is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Adam Sestaro, boys head varsity basketball coach at Highland High School in Medina, Ohio, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
We want to be a team, a program that has priorities, and those priorities are God, family, our teammates, and then ourselves.
Jared Rone is the head men's basketball coach at Mount Vernon Nazarene University, an NAIA school in Mount Vernon, Ohio. During his time with the program, he has guided the Cougars to 18 or more wins in 5 of his 6 campaigns and has an overall record of 117-74. In 2019-2020, Rone led MVNU to its second straight 20-win season and had the Cougars ranked in the top 25 the majority of the season, climbing to as high as number 4. As a player at the collegiate level, Rone competed at both the NCAA Division I and NAIA levels, getting his start at UNC Asheville before finishing up at Georgia Southwestern State University. Since his playing days, Rone has been the assistant coach and recruiting coordinator for NCAA Division II Ashland University and NCAA Division I UNC Asheville, as well as the associate head coach at Middletown High School in Middletown, Ohio. He has also served as a graduate assistant at the University of Dayton and was a strength and conditioning intern at the United States Naval Academy. We recently launched the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset get to the next level. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Our roster of shows is growing, so don't forget to check out all our other podcasts on the Hoopheads Pod Network, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, and our team-focused NBA pods, Cavalier Central, Grizz and Grind, Knuck If You Buck, the 305 Culture, Blazing the Path, and Hashtag Lakers. We're looking for more NBA podcasters interested in hosting their own show centered on a particular team. Email us info@hoopheadspod.com if you're interested in learning more and bringing your talent to our network. Grab your notebook to jot down some thoughts as you listen to this episode with Jared Rone, head men's basketball coach at Mount Vernon Nazarene University in the state of Ohio. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Mount Vernon of Nazarene, Jared Rone, head men's basketball coach. Jared, welcome to the podcast.
I appreciate you having me, guys. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
We are excited to have you on and dig into the things that you've been able to do in the game of basketball. I want to start out by going back in time to your first experiences with the game of basketball. You grew up in a family where your dad was a basketball coach. So talk a little bit about your early introductions to the game.
Yeah, so I have I've always been around the game. Always been a part of a team. My dad was head college basketball coach for about 25 years, and then eventually went back to high school, and now he's an athletic director today. But he was head coach at Mars Hill College in Mars Hill, North Carolina, when I was born. At about three, we moved to Urbana University, where he was the head coach at Urbana University for 11 years. And that was my childhood. I remember a lot of bus trips with the players. I would be I would be at practice almost every single day with my dad and also my older brother. I remember I missed a lot of school days because my dad would pull me out and allow me to go on different trips with the team, and that was my childhood. He had some tremendous teams at Urbana University, two teams, you know, a team that went to the Elite Eight, Sweet 16. He had two twins from Cincinnati named Wade and Wyatt Goins, who were basically like my heroes growing up. You know, I looked at those guys the same way I looked at Michael Jordan and Larry Bird. They were almost on the same level. And it's just, you know, I think of my childhood and I think of my dad's teams at Urbana University, and just being around the game, being in the gym constantly. It was just an incredible blessing. I'm thankful my dad was a coach. You know, I fell in love with the game really early on. And I felt like I've never not been a part of a team. And obviously that's why I've pursued coaching and pursued this profession. I love it. I absolutely love it. And I wouldn't change my childhood for anything.
Did you realize in the moment kind of how lucky you were to have that particular experience with your dad having the keys to the gym and you being able to go on the road trips? Did you realize that at the moment, or was it just sort of your reality and you weren't really processing it that way at that time?
No, I definitely didn't realize it at the moment. It was just what we did. You know, we went to school, then right away, you know, we went over to UU. And went to practice. We were in the gym. We would hang out in my dad's office. You know, he was also the athletic director there as well. And we would spend hours upon hours in that gym. You know, Urbana University actually just recently closed their doors, and we actually have a couple of transfers from Urbana. And I told those guys while we were recruiting them that me and my brother, we hold the record for most shots taken in the Grimes Center, no doubt about it. Just because we were constantly there, and my brother, he's 6 years older than me, and you know, he was, you know, at that time playing in high school, so he was, and I was much younger, and he was very, very serious about the game. So you know, we would be at practice, and then we'd go home for dinner, and then we'd come right back, because my brother would work out on his own, or my dad would put him through a workout, and you know, I'd be on the other end, a little kid shooting, doing ball handling drills, you know, trying to be like him. And we were just constantly in the gym, and you know, I didn't realize it, how fortunate I was as a kid to have that. But obviously I do now, and you know, I have kids now, and I know my two sons and my daughter are probably going to want to do the same things I did, just to be around my team, be around our guys, and grow up in that environment, that small college environment. And it was really, really fortunate, no doubt about it.
Growing up, did you play other sports, or just because you were so exposed and had such access to basketball, it was basketball number one right from the time you were a little kid, or did you play other things?
No, we were a big baseball family as well. My brother played baseball. I played baseball as well. And I was in that time, you know, where we played basketball in the fall and the winter, and then spring, summer, we were all baseball. My brother was a great baseball player, played at the college level, as well as basketball. And, you know, I played baseball throughout high school, as well as basketball, but chose to play basketball in college. But we were a big baseball family. You know, in the spring and summer, my dad would, you know, he'd take us out to the park, and, you know, he'd hit ground balls, to us for about an hour, and then he'd throw BP to us for about an hour. We were, you know, when it was warm out, we were constantly on the baseball field, and then when it got cool again, we were in the gym the whole time.
How important do you think that was in terms of your development overall as an athlete, and maybe continuing to stoke your passion for basketball that you ultimately ended up choosing, where you were able to step away from the game and go play something else? Because we all know, obviously, that there's a trend across all sports for kids to begin to specialize, or at least feel pressure to specialize, or they won't, you know, you can't make it if you don't specialize, if you don't just hone in on your sport by the time you're 10, 11 years old. So maybe just talk about how you felt your multi-sport experience impacted you in a positive way, both in terms of maybe just the way you looked at life, but also in terms of your ultimate development as a basketball player.
Well, you know, it both specifically, you know, and you could talk about, you know, multiple different sports, but specifically with baseball and basketball, you're using different energy systems. There's different skill sets, specific skill sets from a physical standpoint that you have to have and hone in on both sports. And I think it was incredibly, incredibly important to my development in both. And just from a mental approach, being able to step away, you know, from basketball and then step into baseball, kind of that mental shift was really, really important for me. And I know it was for my brother as well, even though we would be, you know, we'd be playing double hitters on a Saturday and, you know, playing throughout the week. But, you know, we'd find 30 minutes to 45 minutes to get shots up or do ball handling, you know, day by day. But just to be able to step away and step into baseball, I know for me was really neat. And to be honest, you know, from a specific sports standpoint, you know, my favorite teams growing up were baseball teams that I have the fondest memories of, because baseball is obviously, you know, you got long, really long Saturdays, and families get to know each other really, really well. And, you know, I have great memories playing baseball in the summertime. And, from my profession, from a recruiting standpoint, you know, we don't recruit all guys that are multi-sport, you know, and I know some guys choose to specialize, but I really like guys that play multiple sports. I like guys that, you know, we got a couple freshmen on our team this year that were football players. And there's a certain mindset and a certain aggression that they naturally play with, you know, because they play football, or whether it's a soccer player, you know, you're talking about, you know, different footwork, or, you know, I think people that grow up playing multiple sports, I think it's an advantage. I really, really, really do, just from a physical standpoint, you know, and a mental standpoint, you know, as they grow into that, you know, age 12 to 16, 17. And then by that point, obviously into college, you're really specializing into a sport. But for me, I loved it. I loved every second playing both, and I highly recommend young athletes playing as many sports as they can.
All right. So for you, as you start to zero in and you're playing both sports through high school, you start to, I'm assuming at some point, zero in and say, maybe my opportunity to play at the collegiate level is going to be on the basketball side of it. So how did you go about as a player preparing for that opportunity through your high school years when you started to maybe see that on the horizon? How did you go about putting together workouts for yourself? Was your dad still working you out and getting involved on that side of it? Where were you going to play your pickup basketball? Just talk a little bit about your process for improving yourself as a player when you were in high school.
Well, if I was smart, you know, I'm 5'10". If I was smart, I probably should have honed in more on baseball. But but I love basketball. That was my first love. I wanted to play at the college level, and I just love to play. I love to work out. You know, I grew up in the era of the, you know, Pistol Pete VHS tapes, where I do those ball handling drills constantly all day long. You know, the Steve Alford All American workout.
Absolutely.
Me and my brother, I remember my brother, he would, you know, he would go do it with the big ball. And then right afterwards, he would do it with the small ball. And then once I got to that age, I would do it as well. And, you know, a really good Division II coach out in New York, a guy named Tobin Anderson. He had this instructional video when I was younger. And I remember, you know, my dad, he basically collected championship production VHSs. And it's something that I've kind of carried on where I have a big collection of DVDs. But he would constantly be getting kind of all the cutting edge, you know, individual workouts. And, you know, I really came into my own, I believe, as a player. And I really, really started to get serious was when I was in the, you know, 8th, 9th, and 10th grade, when my dad, he was a head coach at Urbana University, you know, up until my 7th grade year. And then he took the job at Frostburg State University in Maryland. So he had a, you know, tremendous career at Urbana. Last game, you know, last year they were 26-9. They go to the Sweet 16, and then he took the job at Frostburg State. And Frostburg State at the time was a Division III. They're now a Division II in the Mountain East Conference. But our house was literally a half mile from the school, and we had this big basement, unfinished basement. And you know, at that time, it started to become really big as, you know, I had two heavy basketballs. So I really, really kind of became addicted to working on my ball handling. And I would literally for 45 minutes to an hour every night in my basement, I would go through a long ball handling workout with the heavy ball and then get a normal ball and go through the same thing. And that was at the time, and I would start playing. I started playing pickup with my dad's team in 8th grade. So, you know, for 2.5 years, I feel like that's where kind of my individual game started to accelerate, because I'm an 8th grade, 9th grader playing against, you know, a college basketball team, you know, basically every single day. And, you know, when they started practice when I was in 9th grade, you know, my dad would throw me out there in practice. So I would be doing practice drills with my dad's college team. And it was I was incredibly fortunate to have that opportunity. But those 2.5 years that we lived in Maryland were really the years that I think accelerated me to be able to play at the college level someday.
What did that pickup situation there when you're an 8th and 9th grader, how long, besides being the coach's son, which obviously gives you a little bit of an in, how was it kind of breaking into those games and getting the players who are obviously a lot older than you to respect you? Do you remember what that process was like for you, kind of just sort of earning your spot out on the floor?
Well, I you know, I remember, you know, I remember the first time, you know, 8th grade, I'm out there, I'm probably just standing in the corner, and I'm probably trying to find somebody that I have somewhat of a chance to guard out there. But I remember I became really, really, really confident with the basketball at that time. And I, you know, I was a good shooter, not a great shooter by any means, but but I had quick feet and I was good with the ball. And I felt like I could, you know, with some space, you know, I could kind of get to where I wanted to with the basketball. And, you know, pretty early on, you know, I felt, you know, my dad took over a team that was kind of in the rebuilding mode at the, you know, at the Division III level. And, you know, I felt I could hold my own. You know, the biggest thing, obviously, just was physically, you know, could I physically keep somebody in front of me? Could I not be in the way? Cause I felt from the offensive standpoint, I had a pretty good understanding of how to play and not be in the way from the offensive standpoint. But when I got out there, I knew I had to hold my own, find somebody that I could defend. And, I was around my teams all the time. So I could probably tell everybody else on the floor where they needed to be defensively, because I know how my dad coached them up. But, you know, could I do that from a one-on-one standpoint? And that's where I gained confidence. You know, I knew if I could play against 19, 20-year-olds and hold my own, you know, I felt I could do well against guys my age.
Absolutely. All right. So talk about your high school experience. Maybe give us one or two of your favorite memories that stand out from your time as a high school player.
Sure. You know, the crazy thing about my high school career was, you know, I played, we moved around a lot. So I played on three different high school teams in three different states. You know, I was at a school called Bishop Walsh in Maryland. And then my dad took the job at Cathedral Prep High School in Erie, Pennsylvania. And that's where he coached me. And he coached me for 3 years. It was a really, really special experience having him coach me. You know, he was extremely, extremely, extremely hard on me, specifically my sophomore and junior years. You know, I tell people all the time that, you know, I could be subbed out and I'm getting a drink on the sideline and you know, somebody messes up on the floor and somehow, some way, it was my fault. and he let everyone know about that. But my senior year was really, really unique, because I felt like that was kind of when he almost kind of let me go a little bit, kind of let me fly. And we had a really, really special year at London High School. You know, he took over a program the year before that only won 4 games. We ended up winning, you know, 17. It was one of the biggest turnarounds in the state of Ohio. Won a conference championship first in I don't know how many years at London High School, won a sectional championship. And, you know, my claim to fame that year was, you know, and I actually still have a, you know, my mom still has an article at our house, but I was a first team All Ohio player along with LeBron James. He was a junior that year. And, you know, the little article says Rone first team All Ohio with Hoop Phenom. So it was a picture of me and then picture of LeBron. So
nice.
That was a special memory from my high school days. And I really enjoyed playing for my dad. He really built some thick skin with me, and he coached me hard, and I learned so much, you know, not only on the floor, but off the floor from him as well.
What advice would you give to a coach who coaches their own kid, whether it's just at the youth level or at the high school level? What advice would you have for somebody who is coaching their own kid in that situation? What do you think that your dad did well that enabled you to have such a positive experience with you coaching, with him coaching you? Because we all know that sometimes that can go the other direction if both the father and the son, or the mother and the daughter, or however you want to look at it, doesn't handle things in the right way. So just maybe some advice for coaches who are in that situation, coaching their own kids.
Right. Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, in my dad's own way, you know, he loved me, and I knew he loved me. And I knew when we stepped away from the gym, you know, he was my dad. You know, he wasn't coach. Coach Rone, you know, 24 hours out of the day. And, you know, I think we were able to specifically, you know, my senior year, we were able to really separate the two. And because at the end of the day, I would take my own advice if I end up coaching my own kids, you know, someday is, you know, I got to be their father first. And I got to love on them as their father first. And I got to be able to separate the coach father. And that's hard.
It's hard.
That is hard to do. But I think if you navigate it the right way and communicate the right way, and if your kids know deep down that you love them, no matter what, no matter the performance, no matter how well they're doing or how bad they're doing, that at the end of the day they love them, and it's a growth journey within that process. Then I think at some point, most of the time, even at that time, I didn't fully get it. I didn't fully understand it. But as I've grown, you know, I still look back at certain things and I kind of smile like, okay, I understand why he did that now, you know? I think trying to, really trying to separate the two and make sure they know, that you love them and that you're going to do, that I like the word that you're not giving them tough love. It's you're loving them toughly. And, that would be my advice to
dads.
How
old is your oldest now?
My oldest is 5. He's in kindergarten. And I have a 2-year-old that's getting ready to turn 3, and I have a 4-month-old as well.
Gotcha. All right. So you're not quite at the coaching everybody and carting people around stage quite yet.
Not quite.
Do you know where to hit the backboard for the highest percentage shots? Do you know when using the backboard is better than taking a direct shot? Be certain that you are taking the highest percentage shots by training with the Shoticle. The Shoticle mounts on your backboard to give you the location of the highest percentage shots. Train with the Shoticle and you will score more. Basketball is a data-driven game, so don't ignore the data and the facts. We worry about the data so you can focus on shooting. Visit Shoticle.com now and start scoring more. So for me, I like to equate, and I think it sort of goes to the question that I asked you, and that is when I'm coaching my own kids, what I find is that as the coach, and I'm sure you can well attest to this when you're coaching your team, that you feel so tied into the outcome of that game. And even when I'm coaching my kids when they were 7 or 8 years old, or my youngest is now in 5th grade. So when I coach her team, I get so wrapped up in the coaching piece of it. And, you know, if we lose this travel game, that, you know, I go back and I replay this thing in my head over and over again. And, you know, I try to analyze what we did and what we can do better and how I can make a bigger impact on them. And as a coach, I feel like I get so wrapped up in what they're doing. And then conversely, I tell people that when I'm not coaching them, whether that be in another sport or eventually when my kids got old enough to play for their school teams and I wasn't coaching them and I just became a parent sitting in the stands. And what I found there was that I would look around at a lot of the other parents around me and be like, holy cow, like these people are going crazy. And and I would literally just sit and watch. And I wanted them to do well, and I continue to want them to do well, and I want their teams to win. But it was interesting because I found that 5 minutes after that game ended, I really didn't care whether they had won or lost. I wanted them to have had a good experience, and they'd come off the floor or come out of the locker room and you put your arm around them and you tell them you love them and I'm moving on. And versus when I'm coaching, those games stick with me for days and days and days. And it's such a different experience. So I think my piece of advice that I'd add on to what you said about, you know, making sure there's that separation between coach and parent, I think it also goes for when you're a parent, you know, just realize that the journey is completely about, it's about them. It's about their kid, you know, their experience as a kid. It's not about your experience as a parent versus the situation where you're coaching them. Then it's kind of like you're co-piloting that experience. So just some advice for people who are out there who maybe are coaching their kids or who are sports parents. I think the more you can just realize that your kid is your kid and don't tie up their self-worth into what they do as a basketball player or a baseball player or a violinist or whatever it is that they're doing. Remember that experience is theirs. And I think that's really important to, you know, to keep in mind.
Well, it ties into, you know, it's obviously it's something that we really preach in our program here at MVNU. It's, you know, who are we becoming throughout this process? And obviously, you know, winning and losing matters. It does in life that it matters, but, you know, throughout that process, who are we becoming throughout is the most important. And as a parent, you know, you want to make sure your kid, like you said, is having a tremendous experience and they're growing and learning, you know, throughout that process.
All right. So let's jump ahead there. We'll come back to, I want to talk to you a little bit more about, you know, how you made your college decision and then ultimately got into coaching. But I think just bringing up the point of having it be about who we're becoming, what does that look like day to day in your program when you start talking about obviously teaching the kids more things than just X's and O's and how to execute things out on the basketball floor? How do you go about incorporating, helping them to grow as people into what you do day to day in your program?
Right. Well, it's, you know, at our program, in our school, you know, we're a faith-based institution, you know, intentionally Christian institution. And, you know, faith is a major part of our program. And, you know, we have, you know, I know the word, you know, the culture is a big word in sports and business. And, you know, we like to say that, you know, what kind of environment are we facilitating? And, you know, the environment that we're facilitating day by day, you know, we're very, very strategic in that. You know, whether you know it or whether you don't know it, you know, you are developing culture. And for us, you know, we want to be very intentional about developing that culture. And it's the most important thing about our program. And I'll share just, you know, some details about it. We call it our Rural Cougar culture. And, you know, it's centered around a process driven mindset and a relationships unending mindset. So every single day, you know, we want to be really, really, really good at becoming the best that we're capable of becoming every single day. That, you know, we want to have a growth mindset. We want to compete every single day, but also we want to have, you know, we want to be a team, a program that has priorities, and those priorities are our God, family, our teammates, and then ourselves. And so we're really, really trying to invest in those relationships. And, you know, we have, you know, our core values. You know, our core values are relentless effort, unbreakable spirit, servant leadership, and competitive excellence. And each one of those is connected to that process or to that relationship building piece. And we want to be a 10 plus in both. And we feel like if we're a 10 plus in both and we're very, very intentional, then throughout that, hopefully we're becoming, you know, trying to become the best program that we can become. And, you know, on top of that, we don't, these aren't just definitions that we're throwing on the wall. They're not just signs. You know, it's, we tell people it's not a t-shirt, you know, it's who we are. It's what we're all about. And with that, on top of that, you know, we, as a program, every year we develop standards of behavior, where essentially, you know, it's a huge, huge team session that we have it. You know, we'll have it at my house every single year. And we get all our guys in big groups, and it'll be older guys with younger guys. And we talk about, the first thing we talk about is, you know, where are the specific places that we represent MVNU basketball? And we'll come up with every, you know, every year we got our, you know, our main ones of, you know, on the on campus, in the locker room, on the road, practice during games, whatever it may be. And, you know, we'll come up with new ones every year as well. And, you know, on social media, but then we take time as groups and then we talk about, okay, what does an MVNU basketball player look like in those places? What are the decisions that we're making in those specific places that drive our culture home every single day? So for us, those standards of behavior are the most important part, you know, of the environment, of the culture that we're trying to intentionally facilitate every day, because, you know, those are decisions that are driving us, you know, towards, having our priorities of God, you know, family, teammates, and then self. They're driving that relentless effort home, that unbreakable spirit home, that servant leadership, that competitive excellence, all those things, because we're being very intentional about, okay, what do we look like in these places? And we never want them to be generic. We want to be very specific. If they come back with generic answers, you know, I'll pose specific questions that help us think a little bit deeper, so we can be even more intentional about those behaviors.
I love that, because I think that so often, you know, we hear coaches talk about their culture and we hear them talk about different pillars or standards that they have for their program. And yet, right, I think that a lot of times for players, they hear those things and they say, yeah, I believe in those, or I want to do those. But then when you don't attach a specific behavior, when the players don't know what that looks like or what actions they should be taking to, right, demonstrate those things, I think it can be very easy for a player to, A, kind of get confused and lose their way. And then also from a coaching standpoint, it's easy to just keep saying, well, we need to be this or we need to be that. And, right, then wonder why aren't the players doing it? And a lot of times it's just because, again, not everybody is on the same page. So I love the fact that you're being intentional and you're attaching those behaviors to the standards that you expect. And so then, right, the next step, or my next question would be, when you see players demonstrating those things, or conversely, when you see them not demonstrating those things, how do you go about recognizing, acknowledging them on the positive side when you see it? And then if you see somebody not living up to that standard, how do you go about pointing that out to them and then getting them back on the path that you want them to be on?
Right, right. Well, you know, I think it's naturally a little easier. I don't want to say easier, but, you know, you're naturally trying to define who we're not. You know, you, right, point out, I'm going to point out probably a little bit more often, okay, this is who we're not on the floor, or off the floor, or this area, whatever it may be. But, you know, one of the things that we do, we have this thing called practice connectors. So every single day, we bring our team in before practice. And, you know, sometimes it takes 3 minutes, sometimes it takes 10 minutes, depending. And there'll be a theme every day. And sometimes everybody has to share, or sometimes it'll be, you know, voluntary. But, you know, on Tuesdays, it's Teammate Tuesday, and where I'll ask the guys to give 5 or 6 examples of a teammate really doing something really well, something going above and beyond, what they're asked, or something that they've really, really noticed that, you know, really exemplifies a standard behavior, or something that they've been helping them out. So that's an intentional way that we do it as a program. So now their teammates are really, really calling them out. And, you know, one thing that we really try to, facilitate are players that slowly, as they grow within our program, they become player coaches. So we never, you know, I know we don't name captains within our team. We want, I never want to, You know, on our team this year, I think it's very obvious. People know who our leaders are going to be on the floor and in the locker room. But I never want to name someone a captain, but then all of a sudden, that presses someone else down where they don't feel comfortable stepping into whatever their leadership may be at the moment. You know, we want to facilitate, an environment where everybody can kind of step into their own authentic leadership capabilities and be able to grow into that. So we constantly, whether it's in practice or in conditioning, we want our guys coaching each other up. So if I'm on the sideline, automatically, if I'm a younger guy, I'm getting a mental rep watching an older guy. If I'm an older guy, I really know what's going on. I'm focusing in on one or two guys, and then right away, I'm going to give them some type of feedback as soon as they step off. So it's not, it's an environment where it's not just me saying things or teaching things. We really want an environment where all our players are invested in their leadership growth and their capability of really stepping into who they're going to be as a leader. Because, I really think as a coach, I think a lot of times coaches can bang their heads and say, we need this guy to lead more. We need that guy to lead more. And you have, have meetings with them and say, we want you to do this. You're a leader. You do. But it to me, if you're having those conversations with that guy, then they're probably the wrong guy. That you're expecting something that they're not, they may not be capable of, or they're not ready to step into. So I think you really have to let, leadership authentically grow on its own. And then really, really, like you said, call it out in really positive ways so the team sees that and understands that. And that's why I think building an environment where guys are really coaching each other up, it really helps guys, grow into that really, really well.
All right. So two things related to that. One is, do you have to model for players what that player-to-player leadership looks like? Because we know that that's not necessarily natural, even for kids who are leaders. When you step into a program as a freshman, occasionally you're going to get the player who just kind of naturally gets that. But a lot of kids who may end up being good leaders may not understand exactly what that looks like out of the gate. So the first part of the question is, how do you model for them what it is that you'd like to see from a leadership standpoint? And then I think number two, I guess this is maybe more of a statement than a question, but it seems to me that one of the things you have to do as a head coach is you have to be able to step back a little and give your players space to be able to lead. Because I think one of the things that I know I've been guilty of this in the past is when you're coaching, you tend to want to talk a lot. And when you're talking the whole time, right, you just don't leave any space for players to have the opportunity to talk. So maybe just talk a little bit about those two aspects of how you build the leaders within your team.
Right. When we do talk about leadership, and obviously I think most people would agree that you have to lead by example first. You have to show up every day and do, whatever your job may be to the very best of your ability. That's step one. But then part of step one is, you have to learn how to serve your teammates. We're not a program that, hey, freshmen, go carry my bags. We're stepping in where we want our upperclassmen. So if we're ever going to have somebody carry somebody's bag, it's going to be a senior carrying a freshman's bag. Or it's going to be, when we go out to eat on the road, our freshmen are eating first, and then our, and then we go through our seniors. So we want to try to, uh, we, we want to try to create as many opportunities for our upperclassmen to serve our underclassmen so they can exemplify what that servant leadership looks like. And then hopefully, you know, hopefully our younger guys, you know, are growing into that, you know, and that honestly, that really took time. You know, that took time. I've been at NVNU for 6 years now. You know, it feels old, but my very, very first recruit here is now a graduate assistant. But you know, it's not like, hey, you know, from day one, all of a sudden we have all these servant leaders walking around. Like, no, we had to speak into that, but then we had to create opportunities for our guys to, okay, really step into, okay, what does leading by example look like? Okay, now, okay, how do I, you know, where are the opportunities that I can serve my teammates? And then, you know, like in practice, you know, we had practice this evening, and, you know, there were probably, I know one occasion tonight where, you know, I blow my whistle getting ready to coach, but I saw one of our upperclassmen, you know, teaching one of our younger guys something. And I want to make sure he finished. I want to make sure he finished that comment, because in that moment, that upperclassman was probably giving that kid what he needed way more than maybe what I was about to say. So I never want to cut those opportunities off. To allow guys that really, you know, understand what our program's all about, understand what we do on the floor, to be able to, you know, serve and lead, you know, on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. All right. So let's take a step back to when you first started thinking about wanting to be a coach. And obviously growing up with your dad as a coach, you saw what the coaching lifestyle was all about. You saw your dad go through the ups and downs of what a coaching career is all about. What was the moment when you realized, or maybe it wasn't a moment, maybe it was just a slow gradual realization as your playing career came to an end, that you wanted to coach? So how did you come to decide that coaching was going to be your profession? And then just talk a little bit about how you ended up getting into college coaching, as opposed to, I know you spent 1 year at Middletown, but just kind of how you ended up. Take us a little bit through some of your stops, right, along the way, and what you've learned that's kind of gotten you to your position as a head coach.
Right. Well, you know, honestly, I don't really remember an exact moment where I'm like, you know, I want to coach, or I want, you know, I definitely want. It's kind of like, that's just who I am. You know, it was in my blood. I was always around a team. You know, I've never not been a part of a team, and I knew right away that I wanted to coach. You know, there was, you know, I'm an exercise science undergrad, exercise physiology master's degree. You know, just for a couple, you know, probably a brief time, I thought I wanted to be a strength coach, but, you know, as soon as I stepped out of that experience, I got a GA position in the health and science department at the University of Dayton. And that's where, you know, in the summertime, I volunteered with the men's basketball team there. And then during the year, I was my dad's assistant at Middletown. And, you know, really, you know, kind of, you know, going back to my childhood and, you know, saying how fortunate I was, you know, being around him and his team, you know, I was, again, incredibly, incredibly fortunate to be able to help him out at Middletown, because he really threw me to the fire. You know, he allowed me to coach and, you know, really learn on the fly, on the floor, that, you know, probably, you know, a 22, 23 year old isn't ready for quite yet. And, you know, that's where I really learned how to coach. And that's where he really taught me how to coach and how to build relationships and, you know, how to, you know, really teach the game. And, you know, I was a big, you know, that was kind of the early stages of a lot of skilled trainers and, you know, Gannon Baker. And, you know, I went to, you know, one of Gannon's, he kind of had these schools out in Las Vegas, and I spent a weekend out there and got to know him. And, I really became, really addicted to really teaching, skills on the floor. And that's kind of became my niche as a college coach is, you know, I worked everybody out, you know, all the time. And, you know, I really believe in, you know, even here now as head coach at MVNU is that, you know, we want to build really skilled players on the floor, and we want to give them space and freedom, to utilize that skill set. And, you know, at Middletown, that's where I really honed in on that as a coach and as a teacher. And my dad really, you know, he really let me, you know, let me learn on the fire. And again, I owe so much, to him, on where I am, as a coach. And, you know, I was there for a couple years, and then.
So that player development side, if that was what was your strength as a young coach, mm-hmm. what's something yep. that maybe you look back on and you say, ooh, man, I really wasn't very good at that particular piece of coaching, and something that you maybe had to grow into through your coaching career?
Huh. That's a really, I would probably say, you know, I've really, over the last, you know, 6 years, as a head coach, you know, I was around so many different systems of play, you know, working with my dad and obviously, you know, I worked with John Ellenwood at Ashland University, a great coach, and Nick McDevitt at UNC Asheville, a great coach. Really, you know, I think I struggled there for a while is, okay, deciding specifically on the offensive end, you know, how are we going to play? You know, how, you know, where is my strengths as a teacher, you know, on the floor, and how am I going to grow into kind of my niche as an offensive side of the ball? Cause, you know, defensively, I felt, you know, my dad was a defensive coach. I mean, that's what I kind of grew up, and he grew up in the Bobby Knight era, you know, he was a defend and rebound, you know, and play really fast, you know, type guy. And, you know, that's who I am as a coach. But I feel like I grew so much and learned so much from three really, really good head coaches. It was now, okay, who am I going to become, you know, as a head coach specifically, you know, specifically on the offensive end. And it's been a growth process, you know, ever since I took the job over, at MVNU. And, you know, I learned so much from all three. Obviously, you know, my dad really taught, you know, watching him, build relationships with his players. You know, I knew early on that, that was such an important piece to coaching. Cause, you know, people, you can't coach every kid the same way. You know, you really have to get to know them. Learn kind of what their personality type is, you know, learn, you know, where that, you know, what kind of experiences they've had as a player and their experiences that, you know, with their coaches. And you just got to learn how to coach kids, you know, differently. Obviously there's a standard and there's expectations that have to be met every single day. But my dad really taught me that, you know, building really sound relationships with your players is of the utmost importance, because that's how you learn to coach them. That's where you gain trust, that, and you can coach them hard when you gain that level of trust. But again, I was just really fortunate to learn, learned so much from three really, really outstanding head coaches.
What does that relationship building piece look like for you day to day in terms of, is that formal meetings that you're scheduling with players once a week? Is that conversations before, during, after practice? Is that text messages? Is that just, how do you go about, what are the ways that you go about building the type of relationship that you want to have with each individual player that's going to allow you to coach them in the best way possible to maximize what they can do as part of your program?
Right, right. Well, it's definitely not, you know, the formal meeting. I'm not a formal meeting type of guy. You know, I want to create, you know, different touch points with each guy, whether it's before practice, whether it's after practice, whether it's sending a text, whether it's, you know, showing up at study hall and connecting with a guy, whether it's, you know, before, you know, obviously before COVID, you know, it's grabbing lunch, it's grabbing coffee. It's those kind of those impromptu, you know, informal touch points that I think matter, that I think, you know, that's where I think you find the most growth from the relationship piece, you know, with your guys and just knowing and having them understand that we care about them as people. And that's first and foremost. We care about them as who they are as a person, way more than who they are as a player. And, you know, there's no, like, we don't have any, you know, here's the guide to build relationships with your players. We try to just have it naturally come, because, like, as you get to know them, you know, some, you know, hey, I may have a long text message conversation with one guy, and, you know, one guy, he don't text. You get one word answers from the, right, you know, yep, from this, yep, guy. This guy needs a phone call, or, you know, this guy, you know, I'm the best connection I get with him is, you know, that 45 second conversation before practice, or, you know, or it's, you know, you just find different areas where you can try to connect with your guys in the most natural ways. And also we try to, you know, with our practice connectors, with, you know, some of the things that we try to do in our team sessions, you know, we want to put them in situations where they're vulnerable and they're opening up, and we're getting to know each player, you know, on those second and third layers. It's not just a surface level relationship. We're really, really digging into to who they are and building that real authentic, you know, relationship. Because, you know, even though we tell our guys, just, you know, from player to player relationship, you know, a lot of coaches will, you know, you kind of hear that old tagline, you know, you got to play for the guy next to you and all this other stuff. But, well, if you don't know that person deeply on a deep level, it's hard it's hard to get to that point where you actually are playing really hard for that guy, and where you're getting to that selfless state, because, you know what, I know this person deeply and I care for them deeply, that, you know, I'm going to play as hard as I possibly can because I love this guy. And it's not just because it's not just about myself in this moment. So, again, I know coaches, you know, we're kind of programmed to say relationships the most, but we try to be intentional about building those.
So as you're building those relationships, obviously it goes beyond you yourself building a relationship with the players. You want the players to build relationships with one another, right, as you just mentioned. And then you also want your coaching staff to build relationships with your players. So when, right, you think about putting together your coaching staff and you look back on the totality of your career, and you think about yourself when you were an assistant, and then you get the head coaching job, and now it's your job to put together a staff and hire assistants. What are some things that you learned when you were an assistant that you've been able to carry over as a head coach and A, maybe look for in the people that you've brought onto your staff, and then B, maybe help them develop themselves as coaches based on your experience when you were an assistant?
Right, right. Well, I think one of the most important things is that you can't be the same person for every guy. So whether you're an assistant coach or whether you're a head coach, you know, some guys need a father figure. Some guys need like, you know, an older brother, but some guys just need a coach, you know? And I think that's one thing of being able to navigate, okay, what, within this relationship, what does this person need from me? Because everybody's life experiences are very, very different. And when you get to know people deeply, you through this relationship, you're going to be somewhat different for this person, and you're going to be somewhat different for that person. But I have been incredibly fortunate. You know, I don't have a full-time assistant, in my program. This year we have two GAs, who are, I mean, they are assistant coaches. They work as hard as any full-time assistant or any assistant coach in the country. They are tremendous. And but obviously it can be, you know, for a while there, I only had one GA, and then I have a part-time coach that's just does a tremendous job. He's been with me for five years now, and just does an unbelievable job. And just when he's able to, he's a principal, but when he's able to be around, he's just such a natural people person, and he makes people so comfortable with them that, you know, he's a big part of that. But I've been fortunate to have tremendous GAs, and this year I'm really, really excited about my staff, just because, Caleb Ochen is going into his second year, you know, as a graduate assistant. And there's a big difference between a first year graduate assistant and second year graduate assistant. And he does a tremendous, tremendous job, and he's just growing and getting better every single day. And our first year graduate assistant, like I said, was our very first recruit. So he understands our program inside and out. You know, he speaks our language. So this is kind of the first year I've felt like I've had, if you want to say, you know, quote unquote, an experienced staff. But I felt like, you know, this year I think my staff is as good as we've ever had. And they do such a good job of connecting with our players and being there, you know, for them. And, you know, naturally, you know, if this was a normal year, you know, throughout the day, we have breakfast checks where our guys, you know, between a certain amount of time, they have to go get breakfast, you know, before their first class. And that time is such an important time, specifically for my assistants, just because they get to spend 20, 30 minutes, you know, each morning with our guys. And, you know, when I'm not, if I don't have my kids for the morning, you know, I get over there, you know, a couple times a month and sit in on breakfast and just spend time with guys for 10, 15 minutes at a time while they're eating breakfast before they're going to their first class. And so we just try to, again, we try to create as natural situations as we can. And I think our, you know, my staff now, and, you know, my GAs in the past just do a tremendous job with that.
So one of the things, obviously, that is the lifeblood of any program and that your staff plays a huge part in is the recruiting piece. So talk to us a little bit about how you go about, first of all, putting together your initial list of players that you're going to consider and that you're going to go out and look at. And then two, what your process is once you've sort of come up with your list of players that you're considering, how do you go out and what things specifically are you looking for? There's clearly a level of ability and skill and talent that they have to be able to play at your level. But what are some things beyond that that you're looking for that help you to know that a kid is going to fit your program?
Right. Well, the absolute first question I ask is how are they going to be around my kids? You know, my family, you know, my wife, and my kids are so involved within our program. That's the first thing, you know, I ask is how are they going to be around my kids? And, when we go out and recruit, you know, whether, you know, specifically during the year, you know, my family will go with me really almost every time they can. And that's most of the time. So, you know, on Friday nights, you're going to see my wife and three kids, you know, on whoever we're really recruiting. And with that, my wife, you know, I'll brag about her for a second, but I always tell all our players when they come over to our house, I don't care how good they think they are, they're the second best player in the house at the moment, because there's no doubt my wife is the best player. She was Miss Basketball in the state of Ohio twice, and she's actually a Hall of Famer at the University of Dayton. But she knows the game inside and out, and really gives me obviously great feedback. But again, the first thought is how good are they going to be around my kids?
That's a resume for your wife.
Oh no, no question. no question. She's tremendous. She's tremendous. And but the next thing, you know, obviously with that, with the character piece, you know, we want to make sure, just from obviously an academic standpoint, that academics are a priority for them. And then the three things that we're really, really, really trying to hone in on, you know, we define them as like, you know, how are they humble? Are they hungry? And are they fierce? You know, how, you know, have they gotten over themselves? You know, how much do they want to grow as a player and be coached? And how competitive are they? If we can find guys, and a lot of times, you know, I think at the small college level, as much as we say we want this specific player, we're kind of, I don't want to say obviously not completely like high school, but sometimes we take what we're able to get, you know, because, you know, we can be recruiting a kid for a full year, and then all of a sudden, you know, Furman comes into the picture, or, you know, Northern Kentucky comes into the picture, and we're probably going to be out. We're probably going to be out pretty quickly. So, you know, as much as we want to recruit, you know, 6'5", 6'6" guys across the table that can dribble, pass, and shoot, you know, the next best option, it may be a 6-foot player that can dribble, pass, and shoot. But we really want guys, like I said, we want guys that that have gotten over themselves, guys that are, that really love the game, that being competitive and being good is important to them. Because if they play just because they're talented, because, you know, they've been playing for a long time and they're just naturally good, but if that true, you know, that true love for the game and that true love of becoming the best that you're capable of becoming, if that's not there, you know, we'll take a lesser talented guy every day of the week, but someone that is really hungry to get better and grow and really competes on a day-to-day basis, we'll take that guy, you know, over the talented guy every single time. But you know, recruiting is obviously, you know, incredibly important. You know, at the college level, it's the lifeline of the, you know, of a college team, college program. And, you know, I've been fortunate to coach at three different levels where recruiting is you know, pretty different in all three of them. And I've been able to learn, you know, learn a lot through that. But, you know, we're a program. We don't, you know, we're not recruiting 50 kids. We're not even recruiting 25 kids. We're probably getting a database of, you know, year by year. You know, we have probably a list of 50 or so kids, but we're probably actively recruiting 15 at a time, but we're really honing in on probably five at a time. And we're a program where we don't offer a lot of people. We want to make sure there's obviously a mutual interest. And, you know, once we feel that they're a great fit for us, you know, we could be a great fit for them, then that's when we're probably going to make some type of offer. And that's where we're really going to hone in and really make them as big of a priority in the recruiting process as we possibly can.
So when you're recruiting those kids and you're going out, you're seeing them play, how much do you weigh or value seeing them play with their high school team versus seeing them in an AAU environment? And is there different things that you're looking for in each one of those situations just because of the role that they might be playing on either of those particular teams? So their role on their high school team, chances are they're probably the best player. Right. So you're seeing them in that role. And in an AAU situation, they may not be the best player. They may end up having to do things without the ball in their hands the way they might be in the high school season. So right. Just talk a little bit about how you use both of those scenarios to help you to get a full picture of what the kid might be at your level.
Well, I think they're both of them are incredibly important. And you really kind of alluded to why is that I think it's important to see guys in different roles. I think it's important to see a guy when they're the best player on, you know, on their team, maybe on the floor consistently, you know, how do they handle that? You know, how do they lead their teammates? How coachable are they, you know, as the best player? And then, you know, obviously with their AAU, you know, obviously a very different environment, but they most likely have a very different role on that particular team. And how do they handle that role and what kind of teammate are they within that role is very, very telling, you know, and obviously, you know, from an AAU, you know, aspect, you know, we're able to watch a lot of different guys on a lot of different at a lot of different places. And, you know, I, you know, a small thing of, you know, like AAU is, you know, you may be watching a kid for the fourth straight weekend and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it's a Saturday night, 7 o'clock game. It's their third game of the day. You know, how, you know, what is their mindset? What is their approach going into that game? And I always say it that, you know, if a kid cannot get up and play hard when there are college coaches, you know, in the stands, you know, specifically at the, you know, at these AAU events, then I really feel it's going to be hard for them, you know, come the third week of January, you know, on the road, you know, on a Wednesday night at, you know, at Indiana Wesleyan or at Marion or, you know, wherever you are in the league, to play consistently hard or a random Thursday when you're preparing for someone and, you know, the dog days of January and February. I feel like, you know, that small thing is so telling throughout the AAU process. But, you know, with the high school team, you know, I like to see everything. I like to watch fall workouts. I like to watch practice. And I like to watch games just because obviously those are all very different environments you're going to be able to pick up and see so many different small details on just who they naturally are as a person, who they naturally are as a player. I think they're all so very important for so very different reasons. And that's why we try to work as hard as we can in in both elements.
Another thing that I'm sure is important and that you factor in is times that you may have to talk with their high school coach, their AAU coach, their parents, maybe the people who are in their inner circle. When you get a chance to talk to those people, what are the types of questions that you're asking, or what are the things that you're trying to assess about the player that you're recruiting from those conversations?
Well, you know, we lean, you know, for the most part, we'll lean on a high school coach a lot, and we'll talk to him. And there's some scenarios where, you know, where the AAU coach has a really, really strong relationship with the kids. So it may be, okay, we're leaning on the AAU coach a little bit more, but, we really want to lean on, the coach or the person that has a good relationship with the kid that, you know, is not necessarily going to be, going to sway their decision one way or the other, but there's an emotional connection there. And the biggest thing that we try to figure out, you know, through coaches, obviously, you know, just you're going to find out just from a, you know, overall character standpoint and all these things, but who are they on a day-to-day basis within your team? And I think you got to be very specific with your questions. You know, I can't, when I'm talking to a high school coach, I'm normally not asking generic question like, you know, is he a hard worker? Well, they're going to, you know, most coaches are probably going to say, yes, he's a hard worker. All right. What does that even mean? So we try to be even more specific where I like to ask, like, is he the hardest working player on your team on a day-to-day basis? You know, or, what kind of teammate is he to the JV players? You know, how does he interact with those guys when they're at practice? So we try to pick out, you know, specific questions that may dig a little bit deeper on a specific topic that may help us shine a light on that. And, you know, with us specifically, you know, being, you know, at the NAI level and small college level, you know, we're not, you know, it's not like being a Division I assistant where I really got to pinpoint my evaluations, where if I want to go out and watch this kid, you know, 10 straight days, you know, in the fall, we can do that. You know, we can go out and evaluate as much as we can. And, you know, we're going to try to put ourselves in as many up close and personal settings so we can get a feel for all those small details that we're looking for as well. And obviously that was one of the big, that was the hard things about, you know, about COVID. You know, there was some, you know, so many kids that, you know, specifically at the small college level, that would get recruited in the springtime, and, you know, coaches just weren't able to have those touch points, you know, in the recruiting process. But obviously that's, you know, hopefully things are slowly coming back. And, but those are important things for us to have those specific conversations with, you know, with a coach and trying to get, you know, details. And I'm very, very specific on word choice, and I really try to listen well to the word uses that a coach will describe their players, because I think there's a lot of times that you can pick up on things that might not be fully apparent, but just by the way the coach says something that you can pick up a little bit more detail on kids.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think when you start talking about trying to do all this through the pandemic and figure it all out,
right? You know,
I guess the only positive of the whole thing is that everybody has been in the same position. It's not like it affected one person necessarily more than another. So I think that's the positive.
Absolutely.
So let's assume that we get to come back and we get to have some semblance of a season this year. And let's talk a little bit about how you develop your practices to make sure that you're maximizing the efficiency and the effectiveness of what you do. So talk a little bit about your practice planning process and kind of how you design a practice to get the most out of the time that you're out on the floor.
Well, you know, we have, you know, right away, you know, kind of our standards of behavior, we come up with, you know, we have specific standards of behavior within our program on how we practice and how we go about, you know, doing things. So our guys know and understand, you know, right away, you know, hey, here are the standards that we have on the practice floor. And these are the expectations. And when it comes to developing a practice plan, you know, I was actually telling my assistants today that, you know, I try to spend as much thought as I can. You know, I'm not taking 15 minutes sometimes because I write all my practices out. I don't type them out. I make a practice booklet every year that I write into because I like to find a very quiet place, whether it's on campus or a coffee shop in town, and really try to be in as intentional as I possibly can. And, you know, I'll map out specifically in the, you know, preseason, I'll try to map out on a week by week basis on, you know, big picture things that we're trying to do. But every day I always feel, you know, we're a program that we're constantly, we have to adjust constantly because I think day by day, you know, things may pop up that are needed, that need to be, you know, implemented. You know, last night we really struggled with some specific things, and you know, we had to simplify some things for them today. So the practice I thought we were going to have today was adjusted, obviously, you know, from last night's practice. But we want to build as many habits as we possibly can early on. And we'll do a lot of that through different block training. But as we kind of build those habits on the floor, we want to build in some type of constraints as much as we possibly can throughout a practice, whether it's, you know, one defender, two defender, different things like that as we're building offense, as we're building defense. As we continue to build those habits, we want to play live as we as much as we can on the floor. Just because our practices, we want them to be extremely fast. You know, we're a team. We play extremely fast in the offensive and defensive end. So obviously we want to practice that way. You know, we don't want to be a team that we're not a team that's out there for 2.5 hours. 3 hours, you know, we're on the floor, for about probably 1 hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours, you know, all year long. And as soon as we get in, as soon as we get to the practice floor, our guys have a warm up. You know, in years past, we kind of had a warm up week by week. This year, you know, we're writing out, warm ups, different warm ups, every single day. So they know as soon as they get on the floor, you know, one of our practice standards is do your warm up. So there's kind of no lag time. They're not going in and just kind of randomly shooting jumpers and conversating and all these other things. They know that we have a limited amount of time on the floor, so we're going to be as efficient as we possibly can. So right away, they're doing their warm ups, and those warm ups normally include, you know, footwork and ball handling, any type of, you know, maybe a specific action that we're focusing on that particular day. And then we'll get into, we'll transition into position work. And through that position work, you know, obviously, guys, we're just building skills. We're just building, trying to build habits, build skills on the floor, specifically on the offensive end. Then from there, we'll bring it in. We'll do our practice connector. We'll pray, and then we'll get into our pre-practice session. And that pre-practice session normally includes some type of three versus zero offensive buildup, and then we go through our defensive vitamins. And these are, you know, 7 to 8 different specific defensive drills where we're just really teaching defensive fundamentals. And then that's normally when we stretch, and we'll fully stretch. And then then from there we're competing. Whether it's, you know, emphasis on, you know, small sided games, transition, full court, whatever it may be. But it would be about 45 minutes of kind of skill work, fundamental work, stretching. And then that's when we kind of get into our competing phase of practice.
So when you're in that competing phase, do you track anything that you're doing in practice in terms of, like, I think one of the trends now that you see is coaches kind of tracking wins and losses in games or charting shots. Do you do any of that as part of your practice to kind of up the competitive level, or what do you do to make sure that you're driving that competitiveness that you're looking for?
Yeah, we track wins. I mean, that's the main thing that we track. You know, we have a big whiteboard that we roll out now, and every single day they'll be on there. What specific drills or games that you can earn a win in that particular day. And then one of my assistants will have a kind of a continuous Excel spreadsheet that we're updating on guys. They basically have their winning percentage and wins per day. So they can constantly see who's winning out there. And when you're out there, and we tell guys all the time that, you know, winning and losing matters, and we need to compete on every drill to win. But that's the biggest thing that we track. One other thing that we do that we actually started this year, we got from, I think it was Arkansas's women's basketball program. I believe, don't quote me on that, but we do this thing called a green light shooting, where our guys will have at the beginning of the week that they'll have a green light shooting workout where they'll be record, you know, they'll record on two specific drills. One is normally an inside out kind of spot up shooting drill. One of the main ones we do is just one ball, one rebounder, 5 minutes, trying to make as many as you can in 5 minutes. And then there'll be another drill where it's more game-specific shots, and there'll be a set amount of shots that they take, and then each one of those, a number that they have to reach to either be a yellow light shooter or a green light shooter, or if they don't reach any of those, obviously they're a red light shooter. And then we, you know, after that, for the rest of the week, we put a big sign on their locker on it's a stoplight. And it's either green, it's yellow, or it's red. And, you know, hopefully, you know, obviously we're trying to, we like to recruit guys that can make shots, guys that are shooters, obviously, and we're trying to create a really competitive shooting environment where guys that, you know, hey, that they think they're a green light shooter, but they're consistently at yellow, and they may get to a red, and hopefully that entices them to be a little bit more competitive, and hopefully, you know, maybe get in the gym a little bit more on their own as well.
Absolutely. All right. Next thing I want to ask is, when you're in the middle of your season and you're preparing for a particular opponent, how much film are you yourself watching? And then how much of that film do you share with your players?
We're a film heavy team. You know, I think how much we share, it depends team by team, but we've been pretty consistent throughout the years. But, you know, I'm going to watch anywhere from 4 to 6 games. And then, you know, with that, you know, we have basically in preparation film wise, we have 2 different days that we show film, where one day it's going to be all personnel. We're very, very specific. We really will break down. We cut up, you know, all the synergy numbers, and we're really trying to find holes in players' games. And we're very, very, very intentional about what clips we show. And we will search and search and search to find the right clip, whether it's good or bad for a specific player or opponent. But we'll, you know, our first day of prep will be personnel. And then our second day of prep is normally that's where we go into offensively, defensively on what they're trying to do. What are some, you know, within our scouting, we have three to four offensive keys, 3 to 4 defensive keys. And, you know, we try to be as specific as we possibly can with each opponent on what we're trying to specifically do that's unique to them. And that's where the film and our preparation are centered around those keys and personnel. And we're obviously, we're very, very, we're heavy personnel scout compared to offense, defense, where we want to spend a little bit more time on the personnel edit. I should say more time on the personnel edit, but we will watch that. If we watch anything twice, it's going to be the personnel edit over the overall team edit, just because we want to have a really good understanding of what each individual player's strengths and weaknesses are on the floor. But we're obviously not showing as much as we watch as a staff. But another area that has become big for us is we really dig into the synergy numbers and the analytics of a team. You know, I'll spend, you know, we'll spend a large amount of time really diving into those numbers before we even watch film, where we can paint a picture of how a team plays by digging into those numbers for our guys. And then obviously having that film to back up what those specific numbers say. But we are a scout heavy team, scout heavy program. But that's all. And honestly, that's kind of year by year on how much we give our players. Some of our guys, you know, are very, very analytical, and they can take more and they want more. And some guys, you know, they just won't play. You know, they just want to play. Okay, these are the two or three guys I'm gonna guard. These are their strengths. I think we have some of those, probably a little bit more of those guys on this year's team. So we may dial it back on the amount of information, but I think a lot of that is just team by team and what they're able to consume and how they can consume that and go out and execute a game plan.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think you have to, again, play to your strengths and what each player needs and what you as a coaching staff feel comfortable with when you're preparing for an opponent and getting your team as ready to play as possible. As we're coming up to our time limit here, I want to ask you one final question. It's a two-parter. And the first part is, what do you see as your biggest challenge moving forward? And then number two, what do you see as your biggest joy when you get out of the bed in the morning and you are heading into the office? What's the thing that gets you more excited than anything else about being the head coach at Mount Vernon of Nazarene?
Well, you know, biggest challenge, that's a tough question. You know, I want to say, you know, my biggest challenge, I always, I have such a young family, and I have young kids, and I always want to make sure I'm being incredibly intentional about keeping them at the center of what we're doing as a program, and obviously with my wife as well. And as you talk to you've been around basketball, you talk to a lot of different coaches. You know, this profession can consume you. It can really, really consume you. And I really want to continue to be intentional about not allowing that, you know, not allowing to fully consume me, but knowing that I want to be the best that I can possibly become, you know, for my family, for my guys. But it can't consume me. And that's where it becomes, I think it can become unhealthy at times. But I just keeping my family at the center of what I'm doing. You know, I think that's always a day-to-day challenge, but something that I want to continue to be very, very intentional about, not allowing it to for them not to be. But what I get up for every single day is I don't look at this as a job. I don't even look at it as a profession. It's a lifestyle for me. I've been around the game my entire life. I've been on a team my entire life. It's just who I am. You know, it's who I am. My identity is in Christ. My identity is in my family. And the third part of that is my identity is in basketball. And, I get up every single day, never feeling like it's a job. I get up every single day on asking myself, how can I help my guys just be better? Whether it's better players, better people, hopefully, I can continue to get up and have that same joy, every single day, just because, I love being a coach. I love having the ability to coach at a special institution like Mount Vernon Nazarene University and to have the ability to be around, special people that I work with and young men that I love and I care for and I look after. So, it's never a job, never a profession. It's a lifestyle. It's just kind of who I am, and I love every second of it.
I think that came through loud and clear tonight, and it's a great answer. And I could tell from our conversation, the passion that you bring to your job and the passion that you bring for the student athletes that get the opportunity to play underneath you. And I just want to say thanks tonight for you coming on and being willing to spend some of your time and share with our audience of coaches. Before we get finished here, I want to give you an opportunity to share how people can find out more about your program, how they can connect with you, how they can reach out to you if they have a question or listen to the podcast and just want to pick your brain, and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Sure. Obviously we have our MVNU Cougars website. We have a Rural Cougar social media, Twitter account, Instagram. I'm very active on Twitter, even though I'm on a social media fast right now, but my Twitter handle is at @JRone, and I know there's coaches listening. You're always welcome to come by practice. You're welcome to email or connect at any time, and talk about basketball or whatever it may be. And we really enjoy sharing the game over at MVNU. And I appreciate you taking the time, doing this, and giving this platform for coaches and different people to learn and grow from a lot of different people. And I appreciate you having me on tonight.
Absolutely, wouldn't have it any other way. It's been an absolute pleasure getting a chance to know you and have a conversation and just talk hoops. To everyone out there, we appreciate you tuning in and listening and supporting us here on the Hoopheads Pod, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.